Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Stacy is out, so we got Curtis Rogers in, so the dad vibes have been real. And we're going to bring in another dad on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, the big homie, Big Ray Roberts. What's up, Ray?
What's up, man? I love the dad vibes. That sounds like a podcast.
It's real. It's real, Ray. It's real out
here. Yeah, get your grilling apron on. Get your socks and slides on. We're going to have a fun one today.
I'm all for it, bro. But if it's anything, if I have to have a white apron, it's going to have food all over.
All over that. You know we got to go dark colors, man. Got to hide that. Hey, Big Ray, man, this offensive line, last year they take two tackles. They look pretty good. They should be around for a while. A few years before that, you got Damian Lewis. The center spot has been a position that we've kind of struggled with a little bit. So what do? They sign Evan Brown, this undrafted free agent out of SMU, has found a way to hang around the league, which I always appreciate. I don't think people realize how tough it is to hang around the NFL. He's found a way to do that. So my question to you is, my first question is, what was your initial reaction when you saw the Evan Brown signing? And then what have you seen out of this guy?
Yeah, so like when I first saw it, I didn't know who he was. I'm not gonna lie, and so I went and did some research and watched some video of him. And to be honest with you, like I think he's an upgrade from Austin Blythe. He's not, you know, there's nothing that he does that really jumps off the board, but he has filled in over the last couple of years. Like I think he's played 24 games. And he's done a pretty good job. You know, he's been serviceable at center and at guard. And so I think he has a little better size, especially in his lower body, than the centers they've had here over the past couple of years. And he's smart. He's a smart guy. He does well working up to the second level and getting on linebackers and those things. So I think he's an improvement. I don't know if, in my opinion, I don't know if he's like the long-term answer it at center, but then a lot of that is going to come down to how well the guards play.
Big Ray, when you look at how the offensive line currently looks with the Seahawks, you've got Lucas and Cross at the tackle spots, you've got Phil Haynes, Damian Lewis at the guard, and then Evan Brown at center. Do you think those are going to be your starting five come week one of the regular season, or will we see somebody in the draft maybe challenge one of these guys for a starting spot?
Yeah, so you know, I think Phil Haynes may have played some center in practice, and I know that there was a preseason game a couple of years ago where he's supposed to play, I think it's the Raiders at center, but he got sick or something before the game and wasn't able to play. So I know that they've looked at him at center. And then when he's filled in at right guard, he's played pretty good football when he's been healthy. And so I think that's the key to him, is being healthy so that he can keep growing and keep maturing in the position of guard, and then that way you can then have a guy like Evan Brown at center, and especially if Damian Lewis takes the step that we hope that he's going to take. In my opinion, though, I think there's two or three pretty good centers in the draft that they can look at as a long term player to kind of build around. And there's this kid John Michael Schmitz at Minnesota, but I think he's more of a first round type of dude that could sneak into the first round. But the guy that I like is the kid out of Michigan, because he kind of fits Pete Carroll's mold of player that he's looking for. And his name is Oluwatimi. And this kid started at Air Force, didn't play for 2 years, transferred to Virginia and started for 2 years, became all ACC, established himself as one of the top centers in the league in the country. And then he went on to Michigan and became the Remington Award winner, the Outland Trophy winner, consensus All-American. So he has that kind of grit, resilience story that Pete likes, and he's a good football player. So that's a guy who's like a second-round, third-round pick that I think could come in and be a long-term solution at center.
Ray, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I start going through scenarios in my head. And I always remember what you say. You say, man, I want a lineman with a PhD at that position. I don't want to move guys around. I was doing the exact opposite in my head, Ray. I was moving guys around. So what I did was, I go, worst case scenario, what if they go into camp, and then they moved Damian Lewis to center like they did for a game or two a few years back, and you put Evan Brown at guard because he played a lot of guard last year, and you put Phil Haynes at that other spot. Am I doing too much? What do you think of that situation?
Yeah, the only thing is, like, because of Damian Lewis's progression, like, his first year was pretty promising, then his second year was not so great, and then he was a little bit injured a lot, and then last year was up and down. And so then you're going to move him again. So he moved from right guard to left guard, and then we're going to move him to center. Like, sometimes, even though he's a good football player and he's capable, you can sometimes take a step – you got to take a step backwards to go forward.
Right.
And so you want to keep going forward. And so I think he had a good enough year at left guard. And then he was creating like some really good combo blocks with, his name just went to the top of my head, the left tackle. And so I don't know if you want to start to mix that up again, you know, because the offense is moving in a good direction. So I think this Evan Brown dude has played enough at center that you can say that he's a center. And then I think Phil Haynes has played enough at guard to say he's a guard. I just think that the in order for any center to come here and play well, that is kind of a questionable type of player. Not that he can't play, but he's just not like a superstar stud center. That the two guards are going to have to play really, really good. And so I think, you know, Phil is that when he's healthy. And I think Damon has the ability to be one of the top guards in the league.
Ray, what's your dream scenario for the Seahawks at pick number 5? I mean, we've seen so many guys mock to them. Jalen Carter, Will Anderson, Anthony Richardson, Tyree Wilson. I mean, there's just a few, there's a handful of names right now at number 5. What route do you want to see them go?
You know, at first I was thinking defense, because I agree with Pete at the end of the year where he said that he thought the difference, someone asked him the difference between, like, how do you catch up with San Francisco, and he said it was in the trenches. And so I know they've addressed a lot of that, that they think they've addressed some of that in the free agency. But Carter's a dude out of Georgia, is a dude I like, but, man, he just kind of put himself in a position that makes it kind of tough to kind of pull the trigger on him. Well, I don't want to say that. Make that decision at that space. So the guy that I'm super intrigued by, and I know they're not going to take him at number 5, is that the quarterback out of Florida. The dude is just has a chance to be a transitional, like, you know, once in a lifetime type quarterback. And, you know, Geno, as well as he's played, he's not a dude that's going to be your quarterback for the next 10 years. And so that's just kind of my fantasy look at it. But I think they have to address somebody along the defensive line that can be someone that the opposite team has to prepare for. Like, they have to go, like, where is that guy? Because we need to make sure we prepare for him. We don't quite have a dude on our defensive line like that yet.
Ray, I'm not mad at Anthony Richardson at number 5. It made me think, have you ever played behind or in front of a quarterback that's inexperienced but had a lot of potential? And what does that do to the mentality of that offensive line?
I wish that was the case. I had, you know, Kelly Stauffer and Dan McGuire and Stan Gelbaugh and Rick Meyer and then Scott Mitchell and Charlie Batch. So, like, never really played behind, like, a dynamic quarterback that way. If anybody, I would say, you know, Rick Meyer came in as the second pick in the draft. And, you know, really athletic, move the pocket type quarterback. And so there was a lot expected out of him. And so we had a really smart center who could really help him a lot, and with calls and things like that. So he could just focus on, playing quarterback and reading coverages and things. And so he had a decent rookie year, but then it kind of went downhill from there. But I've never really played behind a really dynamic or in front of a really dynamic quarterback that way. But it would have been nice to at least experience it.
Ray, the Seahawks front office is expected to attend Florida's Pro Day next week. Obviously, Anthony Richardson's going to be the focus of that. But there's another guy on the Gators roster that the Seahawks could also have interest in on that offensive line. Osiris Torrence is his name. He's a guard and was a consensus All-American this last season. Followed Billy Napier to Florida from Louisiana Lafayette. What have you seen from him? And is he somebody that you would have interest in at, say, pick 20?
Yeah, well, the cool thing about, like, I really liked interior offensive linemen from the SEC, whether offensive linemen or defensive linemen, they tend to be pretty solid football players. And so they've played in a really tough league. They've played in some really tough games. They've been under the pressure, under the spotlight, under the expectations. And so, you know, from what I can remember seeing of him, he kind of reminds me of kind of like a big, like Phil Haynes type of a player. Like he's a little, maybe a little bit more athletic, but he's very mauling, like a mauling type player that way. And so, if they want to go that direction at 20, I wouldn't be mad at him because, I mean, honestly, like as much as this league wants to sell itself as a passing league, if you can't protect the quarterback and if you can't run when you want to run, then you're not going to go very far in the playoffs or anywhere else.
Ray, what's it like being a guy who's established on the roster or you're on the team? In this time of the year, we're all talking about moves that could be made and should be made. What does that do to the mental of a guy who's already on a roster?
Well, I mean, I'm not even going to lie. Like every year I was on, there was never a threat of me not being on the roster until like my last year when I was just full of injuries and everything. But every year I'd made sure I knew who they were looking at and who they were drafting. And I would try to figure out like, okay, like what is it about this kid that they're seeing that they may not be seeing in me or that maybe I need to up my game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just use it as motivation, you know, because then whoever they drafted, like they brought in offensive linemen and stuff. I work with them. I don't care. I know how what I bring to the table and have enough confidence in what I could do. I had no problem. I stayed with them out to practice, teach them how to watch film, all that stuff. But as I'm doing that, I'm also evaluating them myself. Like I may go, okay, this guy's a little bit more athletic to me, but he can't learn the playbook. Mm-hmm. Oh, this guy can learn the playbook, but he's not as athletic as I am. Well, this guy has all the tools, but he just can't put it all together. You know what I'm saying? So I would do my own little evaluation like that, but also trying to be a good teammate. So that's the way I would always approach it.
Ray, we often hear players kind of use their draft position as motivation for, you know, how they perform. I mean, obviously, Tariq Woolen this last year, fifth-round pick, has an amazing rookie season, is considered one of the best young players in the game. But, like, you were a top-10 pick when you played. Did you ever, like, while you were playing, like, I'm a top-10 pick. Like, no way this guy can beat me. Is it, like, did that ever play in the back of your mind while out on the field?
I never thought about where I was in the NFL draft or what people were thinking about me when I was playing. And, I was just amazed, honestly, that people thought of me that way, like in any way, like getting drafted, let alone being drafted in the first round and then also being considered a top 10 pick. I remember there were publications that had me as the top offensive lineman in the country, and I would see other offensive linemen go like, well, what am I doing that that guy's not doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know, you know what I'm saying? And so I didn't need that as motivation for me. I just didn't want anybody to beat me. I didn't want anybody to touch my quarterback. I didn't want anybody to touch my running back. I didn't want them to touch the receivers. I didn't want them to touch other offensive linemen. Like, I was just like, I just wanted to freaking bust up anybody that was in front of me. And so, and then the draft thing, like, I understand guys, like, it's become like a respect thing for some dudes and things. But if that's your motivation, then at some point that you got to have some type of internal drive. You know, like I know people will always bring up Tom Brady, but when you talk to Tom Brady, he doesn't use where he was drafted as his main motivation. He has just an internal drive to be the best. And that's what you have to have. That's what sustains over time. Not this idea of like, you know, 8 years in your career, you're still thinking that you were the second quarterback taken instead of the first one or the, you know, and a lot of times if you're the first player drafted, you're going to the worst team, so your career is going to be freaking jacked up. So, okay, don't be the first player in the draft taken, and you're going to make some money, but that money may be short-lived because your career is going to be miserable. So I was just excited to be in the NFL, man. It was a lifelong dream. Honest to God, every time when they would introduce the offense and I run out on the field, I would be crying like a baby. And I would be crying because it was just reliving a dream over and over and over and over. And so it didn't matter to me where I was drafted. I just wanted to get in the league.
That's awesome. Last one I got for you, Ray. I don't think people realize what you're involved with. Like, we talk to you when it comes to offensive linemen and football stuff. We do a lot of work together during the season. But you're involved with the Special Olympics, man. And I follow you on Instagram, all your social media platforms. And you're always somewhere doing something. What's Big Ray up to now?
Yeah, I'm chilling right now. But next month I'll be in D.C., doing some stuff for Special Olympics Washington, and then I'll leave there and go to Indianapolis, and I'm speaking at one of the Special Olympics Indianapolis events. But I'm the director of urban development for Special Olympics Unified Champion Schools, and so we have a concept or strategy called Unified Champion Schools that has three components to it. One is unified sports, where you have students with and without intellectual disabilities on the same teams, and then we have that same concept for unified clubs, and then we have that same and then we have a whole school engagement. And so my job is to get that strategy into all the city urban schools all over the country. So I'm all over the place all the time, speaking to superintendents, teachers, principals, coaches, parents, students, mayors, trying to get our work into those city schools. And so the beginning of this year has been super busy. I've been from Orlando to North Carolina to Minneapolis. I was the Grand Marshal for Special Olympics Washington over in Wenatchee. So I've been really busy the beginning of this year, but doing stuff that I really love, that I feel like is my purpose in life. Football wasn't my final destination. It was just the porch that opened the door to what my purpose is, and that is to serve young people and people that are underrepresented.
That's awesome, man. Just make sure you get that emergency exit row or first class. Them legs is long.
Stretch those legs.
All the time, dude. All the time.
All right, man. That is Ray Roberts, our O-line guru, one of my good friends, man. We appreciate you, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
You too, brother. Thanks for having me, Dad.
Dad vibes, baby. Hey, celebrate Mariners opening day by joining us at our live broadcast outside the left field gates at T-Mobile Park. We'll be live 10 a.m. The Bump and Stacey Show, and then Wyman and Bob will take you up to the pregame show at 6 p.m. You don't want to miss it. It's time for Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
All right, Bump, first down to you. The NFL's competition committee will add to the definition of a player launching into another. What is the change to the definition, and will it help protect players?
The change pretty much is whenever a player leaves the ground, not necessarily like launching himself into it, but if 1 foot is off the ground, 2 feet off the ground, they're going to start adding that as launching. And it's going to just make the job so much tougher for defensive players. I feel for them, but also understand what the competition committee is trying to do. You're trying to keep players as safe as possible. At some point, I think we just have to realize that football is a violent sport. You sign up for it. You know what you're getting into. I appreciate the competition committee trying to make it safe, but what you're doing is you're making it hard on the defense. But something tells me the NFL does not mind a lot of points being scored. More points will be scored because of this rule.
Second down. The NFL will meet to discuss Thursday Night Football flex options. What are your thoughts on Thursday Night Football and the effects that it has on your body?
It is rough. You are not ready to go physically on a Thursday after you played on a Sunday. Imagine playing on a Sunday night, too. Like, your body's not ready to go. You need time to heal. Now, the NFL said, look, they've done some studies and they haven't seen any correlation with injuries and guys playing on Thursdays, but I can promise you this, they're not 100%. Then I think about these coaches, right? You need time to prepare. You got to scheme. You got to get guys ready to go. I think that's why a lot of the times we don't see good football on Thursdays. Now, as a consumer, love Thursdays. I get football on Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I love it. But as a player, I understand where they're coming from. I've heard a lot of players gripe about it a little bit. Richard Sherman's been the loudest voice on Thursday Night Footballs. It is what it is. I just don't think it's a great idea to force these guys to play too many games on Thursdays.
Third down. All right, Bump, why do you feel that it's unlikely Bobby Wagner ends up back here in Seattle?
I don't think it's going down because we ain't got the money. We already talked about going to the store and having to put Al Woods back because we ain't got the money. I don't think we have it for Bobby Wagner. Now, Levante David ended up getting around $7 million for a year of service. I think that's what Bobby will ask for and should ask for because that's the caliber player he is. You look at contracts, you compare contracts, you go across the league and say, who's doing what at the level that I'm doing it at and at the age that I am, and you compare and you say, okay, that's where I should be when it comes to the amount of money. So he's looking at it Lavonte David, he's going to ask for about $7 million unless Bobby is willing to take the homie discount, the homie hookup, the hometown discount. I just don't see it happening, man. I think there's other things that this team needs to do. Would love to have Bobby here in Seattle, though.
Fourth down. The competition committee will not review the hip drop tackle, should they?
They definitely should. And if you don't know what the hip drop tackle is, imagine you're running forward and then you get tackled from behind. And instead of driving you forward down to the ground, it's like they sit back and pull you backwards. And now you risk your ankle getting caught up underneath a body, your knees and all that stuff. It's just not really safe. And people are doing this now as a result to just the rules. I talk about it being difficult to play defense in a league. This is what happens. You start to tackle guys in ways we were not taught to tackle. I never was taught. I've never seen this type of tackling being taught, but it's the safest way to go because guys do not want to get penalized. They don't want fines. They need to look at this. That is how Tony Pollard ended his season, because of a tackle just like that. Now, it is time, my good friend, for What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Bump and Stacey, brought to you by Dick's Drive-In. So, folks, what's on tap?
What's on tap? The Mariners take on the Oakland A's tonight in Cactus League action. Luis Castillo makes his final start of the spring. The action starts at 6:40 p.m. Pregame begins at 6:30 on Seattle Sports Station. All right, guys, almost that time, but not time yet, man. We got lots more to do. We're going to revisit something that went down last night. Your Zags, this, we should just call them the Sweet 16s because they're there every single year. They got it done last night against a team that I rooted for growing up, the UCLA Bruins, but we're done with them. They're leaving the conference. We're done with the Bruins. We'll talk about that game and more coming up next on the Bump and Stacey Show.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Feel like I gotta let this ride a little bit when the DMX comes on, you know what I'm saying? Bumpin' Stacy Show. We got Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacy, and we are going to talk about, is this the most successful program in the state of Washington? It has to be. We're talking about the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Would you agree with that statement, Curtis?
Collegiately?
Yes.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, unless we're going to talk like UW rowing in this segment, which, I mean, shout out to them. They've been doing it for like a century now. But in terms of just consistently in the title conversation, which is about the most you can hope for in college basketball, because the tournament is such a random draw. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw it last night where somebody was like, this year's Gonzaga team would probably lose to last year's Gonzaga team that had like Chet Holmgren on it and a bunch of other really good players.
How's Chet doing?
He's still hurt. He's out for the year. He got hurt at the Pro-Am in Seattle Pacific.
You're right.
But last year's Gonzaga team probably beats this year's Gonzaga team. But this year's Gonzaga team has advanced further than the 2022 team. That's why it's so random in the NCAA tournament, because you just have no idea, A, the draw that you're going to get, and B, just kind of the lucky breaks that are going to go your way. But this Gonzaga team last night showed a mettle, showed, you know, that they were not going to go quietly after falling down big early, down double digits 13. At halftime, down 13. And they really took advantage of some tired legs that UCLA had and dominated the second half up until the final minute where UCLA made it close. But yeah, in terms of just consistent success, Gonzaga is by far the most successful like program in terms of just having a shot at the title every single year in this state.
There are
and
few
that's
things,
that's a reality that I think a lot of, you know, there you know, there's a certain section of collegiate fans in this state that don't want to hear that, but it's the God's honest truth.
That's the truth, man. There's a few things that I count on in my lifetime, and that's, you know, my kids wanting something at some point of the day, the wife hitting me with a honey-do list, and the Zags making it to the Sweet 16. That's just what they do, and they were led by Mr. Timmy, 16 of 24, 3 of 6 from the free throw line, ended with 36 points and also had 13 rebounds and 4 assists, 2 blocks. The only stat line he did not record a stat in is steals. right? And he don't get paid. Well, he doesn't get paid. Maybe he does get paid. Maybe he has an NIL. He don't get paid for steals. But Timmy, man, you can't talk about this team and not highlight Drew Timmy, the 16 kid out of Texas with the personality that you would expect from Eastern Washington, right? You described him as an Eastern Washington type of dude.
Which is funny because he's originally from the state of Texas, yeah. But like his personality is the kind of personality that makes college basketball what it is. Like, he's a four-year player, a guy that we've gotten to know over the years and seen him go from, you know, just this wiry freshman guy to a big contributor on the team that nearly went perfect during the 2020-2021 season. Last year was one of the holdovers from that team, stepped into a huge leadership role. And then this year, he's the guy. He is the absolute guy on that roster. He's an All-American player, pours in the game of his life last night, misses those free throws. And Bump, we kind of hit on it a little bit. Like, I fail to see somebody that has had a better career in a Gonzaga uniform than him. Adam Morrison had the best season, I think, of any Gonzaga player when he, I don't know if he won National Player of the Year that year. Him and J.J. Redick were going back and forth. Right. That was an incredible season. But I think the totality of Timmy's career in Gonzaga, playing in a national championship game, going to a Final Four, going to multiple Elite Eights, going to a Sweet 16 every year he was in school, something that is so hard to do. Like, this guy has become a Gonzaga legend. Like, obviously they're going to have to retire his number at the Kennel one day. Like, there's no doubt about that. And honestly, like, you look at every other player that's played in the Gonzaga program, we know that John Stockton has had the best pro career of any Zag ever. Right. Like, that is probably going to be unchanging for as long as, you know, basketball exists. I don't see anybody coming down the pipe that's going to surpass that. But in terms of what has been done in a Gonzaga uniform, it's Drew Timmy, and it's starting to become not even close.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his stats over his career, right? His first year, he averaged 9 points. Second year, 19. Third year, 18. And then 21 points this year. He's 13th in college basketball when it comes to average. I look at his field goal percentage, 62% from the field. If there's any knock, it's his free throws. A 6'10 guy you don't really expect to be great at the free throw line. But he is the glue. He's the nucleus. He is the identity of this team. So now they take on UConn. Now, you had some words about UConn. You feel like this is going to be a tough task.
Yes. UConn has been probably the hottest team so far in the tournament, winning all three of their games by double digits. They blew out Arkansas in the Sweet 16 last night. At one point, they were the number one ranked team in the country, too. Sanogo is a really good player. Dan Hurley has been a really good coach for the UConn Huskies. So I think that UConn's going to give them a very, very tough test. It's going to be a really fun game. I mean, obviously, Final Four trip is on the line. We're going to be rooting for Gonzaga because that gives us more to talk about for sure come Monday. But yeah, I think this game is going to be even tougher than what UCLA posed last night. But I mean, just looking at the amazing performance from Drew Timmy, that was obviously the story. But in cut number one, I mean, Julian Strother hitting the shot of his life and one of the biggest shots in Gonzaga program history.
Chances are you'll get more than one opportunity. Bravo for the lead.
Man, moments like that, that's why we love March Madness, because you're guaranteed to have moments like that, to see these buzzer beaters and then the passion that's behind these young athletes. There are still amateur athletes. Everyone's trying to make it to the next level. Some of these guys will only play college basketball. That's what makes March Madness so great. It's the purity of the whole situation.
What went into your mind last night when you saw Julian Strother take that handoff 35 feet from the hoop at the logo, and with 7 seconds left on the clock too? He didn't think about, you know, dribbling in for a better shot. Like, he was taking that shot. What was in your mind when you saw him pull up and it's like, oh man, he's shooting this?
I was thinking, dang, Steph Curry, look what you did. Look what you did, Steph Curry. Everybody's pulling up from the logo, but that's so common now. I remember when I was in high school, there's like one person on our team who can shoot threes. He's the only one who had the green light. Everyone else is like, look, run the offense, get to the paint, mid-range jumpers. Now these kids have range for days. I wonder if they move the three-point line back a little bit. They've already done it once. Why don't they do it again?
In the college game, I still don't think that's a good idea because, like, there are few guys that can hit a three consistently in, at the collegiate level. Most guys who can are the ones that are going on to the NBA. And you, like, think about these other conferences that play, conferences where, like, Fairleigh Dickinson's playing.
Right.
Or, I mean, Princeton has a game later today against Creighton. Like, those conferences, I don't know if they're going to have the same kind of success that they do if you're playing with tougher rules, if you're playing with a three line a little bit further back. But how about the foresight from Mark Few back in October, earlier on our station? He was on with Brock and Salk in October in cut number three. He picked one guy to hit a game-winning three if he had his choice of all the players that he's coached. And last night, it came true.
If you need one three-pointer to win a game, and anyone you've ever coached can take that shot, who do you want taking the shot?
Oh, man. You know, crazy as it sounds, I tell you, Drew Timmy's got the clutch gene. I wouldn't mind him probably pulling up from there at game point. You know, I think he'd find a way to make it. It's hard, guys, when you go through all of them. It's like we got this giant family, and I'm going to offend somebody.
Right, of course. That was my goal.
I don't think I want to offend anybody that's going to play for me this year. I think that's, I kind of weighed that out in my head.
All right, will you do me a favor?
Julian Strother. Let's go with Julian Strother.
How about Julian Strother?
How about it? Give it to him. Shoot it. Make it. Game, set, match. The Zags go into the Elite Eight, and they will face UConn. It's going to be a tough one, man, but this is what they do. We'll see how all this works out. Just a reminder, this hour of the Bump and Stacey Show is brought to you by Mazda of Everett. It is time for you to contribute. All right, you listeners, you texters, text us in. What I need to know is next. 866-979-3776. Text us advice. Questions about March Madness, football,
weekend
your life,
plans.
Weekend plans, your kids. We got kids, dad vibes. And we got Brady Bones back there, too, if you want to talk some pitching or something like that. We got an arm. All that is coming up next on the Bump and Stacey Show.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
You hear this tune, you know what time it is, man. What I need to know. This is where you guys participate. Text in what you need to know. 866-979-3776. We got some good ones so far. What I need to know is the Hawks, Mariners, Sounders, Huskies. And for Bump the Cougars, which team has the best chance of winning it all this year? It's always the Sounders, I feel like, though.
They missed the playoffs last year.
They did miss it last year, huh?
I'm going to say the Mariners with the Huskies trailing closely. The Huskies won 11 games last year and bring back most everybody from that offense.
Yeah, except for the O-line.
Yeah.
Losing three, but you still got Penix, still got Rome.
I think the Mariners have the best chance of any team in town to win it all.
Okay.
The Huskies are going to need some help, though, because there are so many really good college football teams. Like, watching the college football playoff last year, especially Georgia, it felt like they were playing a different sport than everybody else.
They were playing with, because they had a 25-year-old at quarterback, man. It always helps out to get that age at quarterback. What I need to know, Curtis, there comes a time in every man's life where he reaches a crossroads. He either becomes the guy who knows everything about World War II or the guy who knows everything about meat. That's grilling smoke, his various cuts. Which one do you choose?
I feel like the guy who knows more about meat and grilling and whatnot, that's more useful than World War II trivia outside of like an educational realm.
Right.
So I'm going to go with it between the two, since you got to pick one or the other. Uh-huh. You can't be neither. I would pick the guy who knows everything about me.
Grilling. You know what? One of the biggest honors I had in my life was when my father-in-law officially made me the grill master.
Yeah.
Because I know how to do what I do, baby.
When you're at like a cookout and there are other dads there, do you all just kind of stand arms crossed around the grill and not really say anything, but just kind of watch whoever's in charge of the grill and be like,
no,
I don't know if I do that.
I see people do it. Me, I kind of stand off to the side. And then once the food is ready, I ask, who did this? So they know, like, it better be fire. Because I'm watching you. All right, here we go. What I need to know, any of your offspring super picky eaters around two? Can't get this child to eat anything but pretzels and French toast. I have a 10-year-old who's still a picky eater. All he wants to do is eat carbs. Carbs, 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 carbs. I'm like, bro, you need some protein? All right, come on, and switch it up.
I have a near 2-year-old. She turns 2 in May, and she is going through her picky eating phase. Mm. She loves herself some chicken nuggets. She loves, like, berries and fruit.
Uh-huh.
But every night at dinner, we'll try to get her to eat what we're eating. And we refuse to, like, cook her own meal.
Right.
Like, you're going to have what we're having. Uh-huh. And she'll have, like, 2 bites. And that's it. And it's like, dang it. We're going to break through, though. Right. We're going to break through.
You get there. Yeah. Get there. What I need to know, Bump, who did you look up when you were crafting your skills as a football player? So there are two guys that I watched growing up who I felt like we were kind of the same player. I used to watch Hines Ward, and I used to watch Wes Welker. Those two guys were craftsmen. And Hines Ward was dirty, too, man.
Yes.
He used to...
And he hits you with a smile, too.
Hit you with a smile, no mouthpiece. If there was a launching rule or a defenseless defender rule, that'd be Hines, man. He'd be kicked out of games. He was violent with it. It was violent.
Yeah, he would not have a... he wouldn't have much of a place in today's NFL playing the way he did.
Nah, he'd be fined $1 million a year. What I need to know, if you could turn back time and pick one player on the Seahawks Super Bowl winning defense and put them on today's Seahawks defense, who would it be and why?
I mean, D-line is the biggest need right now for the Seahawks. Right. D-line and pass rush. So maybe Michael Bennett?
Might be. I would go with Bobby Wagner.
Peak Bobby.
Bobby
Wagner. He was incredible back then.
Yeah, he was
awesome. He was only in his second year in 2013 when they were in the Super Bowl that year.
Imagine you win a Super Bowl early in your career and you think, oh, we're going to get back here several times. I'm going to win a couple of these things, man.
That was the thought.
That hurts. What I need to know, do you guys think there's too much analytics in sports? Would you like to go with more gut feeling in sports?
I think there's the right amount of analytics in sports. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's too much of it because it allows for you to kind of weed out some guys who may not hang around as long as they would have without it.
Uh-huh.
But this is the proper amount. We don't need any more. Because then it gets to a point where it's even harder for casual and like diehard fans to then understand, like, what am I looking at here? Because I feel like if you bring up somebody's baseball savant page where it's like, I don't know what these splits are. Uh-huh. I don't know what these stats say. like a lot of casual fans have no idea what they're looking at with that.
Yeah.
And it makes it a lot tougher to understand what you're seeing. Like, I get why the eye test is popular for a lot of people because it's like, I know what I'm seeing. Uh-huh. This guy is good. I know what I'm seeing. This guy's bad. What do you mean these numbers tell me he's actually better than what I'm seeing? It can be tough for a lot of people to kind of understand, like, you know, what you see may not tell the full story.
Yeah.
But then also what you see on a stats page may not tell the full story.
Yeah. When I was an offensive coordinator, sometimes I would look at a defense and know that this play shouldn't work, but go in my gut and say, my boys are just going to whoop their you-know-what on this play. So we're going to run it anyway. I appreciate the analytics and the gut feeling. You know what I appreciate? I appreciate Curtis Rogers and Brady Bones. Put together a heck of a show today.
Yes, thank you, Brady.
Dad vibes with our nephew over there in the control room.
I'm a nephew now?
Your nephew, man. You're like 12 years old, man. Your nephew. Your nephew, man. You ain't got no gray in your beard yet. Next week, man, it gets back to our regular staff, man. Stace will be here. Curtis will be back doing his thing. I'll be sitting at this same spot. We appreciate you guys listening to the Bump and Stacey show today. Don't go anywhere. You got the Wyman.
Wyman and Bob.
And Bob
last
show.
One from Peoria.
Last one from the desert. You guys tune in, man. Should be a good one. Take care.